Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Lorenzo's Music Podcast. On today's show, I'm going to talk to a hip-hop artist based out of New York named Donny Ozone. Donny Ozone is actually a performer who started out making acapellas. Donny started doing that on a site called CC Mixter, which is Creative Commons musicians sharing their tracks so other people can remix them. And from there, Donny went on to release stuff on SoundCloud and then got picked up by the net label that we released one of our EPs on called Bloxonic. And Donny consistently releases stuff with the Bloxonic net label, and he hosts the Bloxonic podcast where they play new releases and artists from the net label itself. Now, we talk about different ways of making music, the equipment we use, and one of the biggest conversations I wanted to have with Donny was getting drum sounds. I love hip hop drum sounds, but I can't create them through our stuff with our live drummer. I would love to get that kind of sound. So I kind of asked for some advice on how Donny gets those sort of sounds. And we talk about that kind of production technique, but how I could apply it to analog drums. So it was a fun conversation. We talk about just music and creating and releasing and just all the different types of stuff that we've been doing. So check out the show. Here it is, starting right now.
I'm Donny Ozone, and I make hip-hop music. I've been making it for a long time. I released through Bloxonic net label, which I know you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I'm also the host of The Block Report, which is the Bloxonic podcast.
Yeah.
Comes out once a month, and we review the latest releases from the month before. And then one of our artists, Time Zone LaFontaine, does a Bloxonic catalog mega mix. It's a 20-minute segment where he just reaches back into the catalog mixes it all up. It's great. I love it. I think that's such a great
asset. I think I just didn't know what it was called. I knew that you guys did that.
We're going with mega mix for now. So, okay. Yeah. And then the last segment, it used to be the top five countdown, but for 2024, we're switching it up and we're going to do an artist spotlight or maybe like a crew spotlight. So like Cheese and Potsy are part of the Puck crew. So we could maybe do an entire Puck crew spotlight, play like five or six songs from either the crew or the artist or latest album or whatever. So, that's what I mainly do.
Yeah.
And I don't release a ton of music. I've been sporadic lately.
You've got like three of them so far this year. So I wouldn't say you don't release a ton.
This year's better so far. Yeah. 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 But the last few years I've been kind of sporadic, but it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. But yeah.
Well, first let me start out, cause we just went over a bunch of things that I want to ask you about. So, but first, Great. Where are you located right now?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. And I'm in Southwest Brooklyn, which is Bay Ridge, near the Verrazano Bridge, if anyone knows where that's at. So,
okay.
Yeah. No,
I don't, but you know, okay.
Yeah, South Brooklyn, we'll say that.
How long you been there?
Exactly 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I was in Boston before that. And then I was in Pennsylvania before that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, you started off by saying you're on the Bloxonic net label. And that's how I know you, because we've also, great. I mean, I knew Bloxonic before my band had released an EP on there. Actually, one of our songs got heavily promoted because Mike from Bloxonic, the person who runs it, put our stuff on one of his, he did like collections of Creative Commons music on the Free Music Archive back before WFMU got rid of it. Which is unfortunate. I still don't understand why they did that. I mean, wait, I do, but I don't. You know, I wish they wouldn't have.
I wish they wouldn't have. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. It's still there, but it's also, all right, now we're going off on a weird tangent, but I'm going to start anyway. So it was a great place for Creative Commons musicians and artists to upload their stuff. And people would go there to find music for videos. And that's mainly how a lot of our stuff would get discovered. Now, that's still what people go there for. But, and this would have happened anyway. I don't know if they had some sort of curation system, but now it really is music for video. Like stuff you would think is, I need I need some sort of backing. Not like I need some cool band for a thing here. I need something that has strings and sets a mood of ambient night, you know, or suspense. And so it's a bunch of people writing theatrical pieces now. Yes. And it's, I tried to go through there recently looking for music and, you know, more power to them. If it's working for it, I mean, it's still a business at its core, but yeah, it's really hard just to find bands. Even Jamendo, which is another one, does the same thing out of France.
Yes.
But it's, you can't find just bands there anymore, and that's unfortunate. So
I totally agree. I feel like a lot of the Creative Commons music maybe is headed in that direction, or did it already headed in that direction where it's more instrumental because people are trying to sync it up with videos, or they get more of a response because that's what people are using. That's why they're looking for the Creative Commons music. And then the instrumentals just seem to work better, maybe, whatever.
Right.
But yes, when FMU had that, the FMU DJs, well, was it Liz Berg, especially, she had a 3-hour show and 1 hour was completely dedicated to the FMA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was incredible. Yeah. And I would listen every week and she played a lot of Block Sonic stuff. She was a big fan of Block Sonic. She definitely played Cheese and Potsy. She played The Impossibles. She played a few by me even.
Okay. And I like how you said that, like, even by me. It's like, come on, man.
I have this funny novelty rap about, it's called Cookies, about baking cookies and sort of using it as sort of loosely as a metaphor, but, and, okay. I was surprised she played that, but she for whatever reason, she really liked that one.
Nice.
And I was surprised because it's like a kind of a goofy novelty song, you know? So, but I was so happy to be played on there by her. She's awesome. She's since left the station.
Oh, okay.
And then obviously the FMA, they parted ways anyway. They got rid of it anyway. But there was a golden age of when they used to play Block Sonic on WFMU, and I used to listen live because that's out of Jersey City, so I can get it live on my radio here, which is great.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stations. I support them in all ways. So, but yeah. So going back to what Block Sonic, I guess. Well, before Block Sonic, I can jump back to, but before Block Sonic, I was doing a lot of work over at CC Mixter. So,
okay.
Do you have any experience with CC Mixter?
I do. And I was actually going to, this is one of the questions I was going to ask, because in your bio, it says you first started out releasing a cappella stems. And I'm like, well, the one place I know where people do that is CC Mixter.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah. So yeah, I had made a lot of hip hop music in high school. I was in a hip hop band. We did all the Battle of the Bands and all that stuff. We even did the pep rally. So, and I had my own radio show for a while at that time. And then there was this big chunk of time when I still make music at home, but didn't really know what to do with it. I wasn't really pursuing it. It was just goofing around for years.
Yeah.
But then I don't remember how I stumbled across Creative Commons, but somehow it came into my life and I had an epiphany of like, wow, what if I shared my acapellas instead of my whole songs that way? And then I found, doing some research, I found CC Mixter was like the perfect platform to try that out on. And it went better than expected. When I jumped into it, I didn't have that much confidence because I only ever had one song released before, back in 2004. I had an Electro Clash song on Ninth Wave Records.
Okay.
Released on an electro compilation, like an electro pop compilation. And then, so that was really my only win, other, you know, as far as releasing anything. So I didn't know if anyone would just ignore me or what would happen. But to my surprise, got a lot of response for the acapellas. And that lit a fire around 2011 that I've just been following ever since. So I just kept following that trail. I stayed with CC Mixter for a while. And then at some point, I was doing both CC Mixter and SoundCloud back in the day when SoundCloud was heavily Creative Commons.
Yeah.
And they had groups, so you could go in there and promote yourself by going into the groups and talking to people and listing your song. And that was super helpful. And I would even reach out to other artists who were doing similar things, and we would trade tips back and forth. So that was great. But before that all changed. And then somewhere during the SoundCloud years, Mike Gregor from Block Sonic discovered one of my SoundCloud tracks, and then invited me to start releasing on Block Sonic, and I've been releasing with Block Sonic ever since. And now I can go back to CC Mixter whenever I want, but I just got away from that. And we can talk about that if you want.
Same with me. I actually just revisited it recently, and it's amazing how the site is exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the same. It's such a great group of people. They're very supportive. There's no bashing or hating over there. And if you go in that direction, they're immediately on you. They police it very well. And they keep the vibe positive. And that's a huge part of why I love CC Mixter, as well as, of course, the collaboration. I love that you can upload an acapella, and then over the next few weeks, you're just getting all kinds of versions back, like, you know, and all genres you would have never expected. And it's so much fun. So
when I think of because of the name and what I've associated it with over the years, but when I hear acapella, I'm thinking of like, it's just a choir. It's just, you know, like five piece harmonies and stuff. What kind of acapellas were you actually uploading?
Rap or hip hop, like, so raps and spoken word and maybe like faster, simple novelty raps that would be more like an electro type of electro clash, electro type of situation, like 120 beats per minute. But instead of like focusing on dense lyrics, it would be written simpler, like, so better for a faster beat. So yeah. I was experimenting with all those things, just throwing stuff at the wall. So
yeah.
Yeah. And then to my surprise, people outside of CC Mixter would take my vocals and use them in actual releases. And they would reach out to me and want to do paperwork and stuff because they didn't trust the Creative Commons license. Maybe it was the label they didn't trust it, or whoever was involved. There have been several times when I've signed paperwork to say, you know, this is non-exclusive, but you have permission to use it and all this stuff for a few.
Well, you release under non-commercial, right?
Yes. No. Well, I do now, but on my CC Mixter days, I was very adamant about doing CC BY for everything I did. There may be a few that snuck on there at the end when I went to NC, but I tried to keep it, like, for the most part, I was going for 100% CC BY.
Okay.
So, was to my surprise, it went great. Yeah, a lot of awesome things happened outside of CC Mixter from CC Mixter as well.
Yeah. And that was, so CC BY is, that's, yeah, that makes it confusing why they would say, we want to get you to sign something saying that it's okay. Whereas put it under CC BY SA, which is share alike, meaning that they can use it with whatever they want, but they have to put it under the same license. And the reason I did that is because it was a weird thing. One was that there was a weird time period where companies started popping up the one that did it to us was out of Korea, and they would start claiming our music because they could take the music and upload it to a rights service and say it was theirs because they were able to download it. And then people started getting strikes and all this kind of stuff. Like, they would get contacted and then they'd go, hey, I thought I could use this. And I'm like, you can. And
yes,
you know, that sort of thing. So I started putting it under a share alike license just because it's like, well, if you're going to use it, then you also have to release it under Creative Commons. You can't just, which is what the SA is for. I don't know if that solved it or not, but I haven't had that happen in a while.
Yes. So I had a similar thing happen with CC Mixter. I had a rap that was remixed by Roburo, which is one of my favorite CC Mixter hip hop producers. He does hip hop and house. Those are the main genres he concentrates on. But so one of the songs that he had remixed, someone took that a cappella, created a drum and bass song with it, signed it to a label. And then where the confusion came in is I think the label didn't understand that how it all works. They obviously didn't understand how it works because as soon as they released that, they started issuing takedown notices to Roburo and others who had remixed that exact track, that they had full rights to it. And that, so everyone was coming to me asking me, hey, what's going on with this? You know, and I'm stuck in the middle. Like, you know, I don't know how I'm going to stop the label from issuing these takedown notices, and they probably think they're in the right. It depends what the producer told. I don't know what conversations they had, you know.
So this label was just like, oh, this is just free music. People are saying you can take this music and sell it for yourself. Well, like, no, that's what they thought it was?
Well, no, it's a little different than in your case, I believe. This, they took the a cappella and remixed it to a drum and bass.
Yeah.
With a drum and bass producer. So the odd part about the whole thing was they were issuing takedown notices for like the hip hop version, a completely different genre version that has, sounds nothing like their version, just because it had the element of the vocals in it. And okay. I don't even know how they were finding the other ones with the vocals in it that were, because it, you know, you'd think they would be looking for an exact replica of the entire track of the music and the vocals right. together. But the fact they were going out after all these different people just for the vocals alone, which was strange, is very strange to me. Yeah. I don't know what was going on with that, but I did get tangled up in that. So I know what you mean. Yeah
that's a real fun thing to get tangled up in, because getting a hold of people is super difficult. Trying to find out who you're supposed to contact, or the worst part is when you do finally reach someone and they respond back, you know, you try to be as clear as possible, explain as much as you can. And then they basically read the first line and they go, "Oh, I see you're having trouble. What video are you talking about?" And it's like, really, I got to start over? Then it's like, I'm talking about this video. "I'm sorry, you're having trouble with a video. What's the problem you're having?" "Oh my God."
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
So, so you were releasing a cappella stuff, but what kind of music were you doing? Like, were you just like, "I'm just gonna freestyle and talk," or were you doing music before that? Like, what would you say is how would you explain your music?
Hip hop with rap.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would make a demo, a full demo, music and everything, and polish it up to where I got it to where I, you know, was happy with it. And then I would strip all the music away and just upload the a cappella. I think in a lot of cases, though, I may have also included the stems of the music.
Okay.
But I think people were mostly grabbing the a cappellas the way I remember it. And then I may have eventually just started putting just a cappellas up after I figured that that was working the best at the time. So, but yeah, so I would just create a hip hop track, verse, chorus, verse style, or maybe one long verse, but no, it would be written and it would be worked out. I wouldn't do a freestyle or anything like that. But I did freestyle a spoken word piece that became very popular called Destination Unknown. It ended up in a lot of house tracks, few techno tracks, some trip hop. The thing about that is, because it's spoken word, it's so easy to match it to so many different genres. So that was very successful. But that one I actually did freestyle that. So that was a lot of fun. But I only used it because it happened to come out good. I think I'd have to do that like 20 times and then just pick the best one or whatever if you're gonna go for a freestyle. But and then there was Tiny Spaceships was one I did, and that was more on the electro side. I would say it's a rap, but it's super simple rap. So like I was saying before, it goes with a faster beat, but it's verse, chorus, verse as well. And that was remixed by a producer, and then it actually ended up on a huge BBC podcast. I'm trying to remember the name of the producer. It might have been... I forget the name of the producer. Okay. If I think of it, I'll let you know. I just uploaded that to CC Mixer, and then a few months later, it was on the BBC in a remix show, which was crazy. So that's basically what I did. Yeah, I make the song and then strip away the music, and then either just upload all the stems or just the a cappella.
So how are you making the song? Like, what kind of gear or process are you using, or you know, that type of stuff? Like, what's the process for you setting up a song when you do it?
Yes, I used to write my lyrics first and then create the music around that. Mm-hmm. But in the last year, I've swapped that around, and now I'm making the music and adding the lyrics. And so for making the music, lately I've been going, I'll look up a jazz song on Chordify, and I'll write down the chords that make up the song and then play around with those chords in a different order, or, you know, a lot of times I don't even listen to the song, or maybe a song I vaguely know,
right?
But sometimes I don't even listen to it. So I'm just looking for that certain sound and of the chords that go together.
I've actually done that a few times too.
Yeah. Cool. It's a fun way for me to make music. Yeah. And then I map it out. And I've been making fake jazz songs where I kind of just riff and play to a metronome, or maybe I would put the beat. I usually do the metronome because I add the beat later. But and I lay out all the chords and try to just do a terrible, terrible fake jazz song. And then I sample, I break that apart into stems and sample myself. And then I add the beat to it. That's what I've been doing lately. And I've like, I'm liking how that's been turning out. I did one with my, I have like a children's Casio keyboard, and I did it with that, and it came out it's hard. It doesn't even sound like a Casio, which I was surprised.
You're not talking about like one of those little tiny Casio ones, are you?
The medium size, like a modern day, the SA-something, the one with the orange button on it. That automatically brings up the piano or whatever. I went to my buddy's house and his daughter had the exact same one that I had purchased for $50. But so I've been using that. Yeah. And then once you add like the vinyl warp and everything, next thing you know, it doesn't even sound like a Casio. The modern Casios have pretty good samples in them. So, I've been doing that because I've been staying away from sampling like actual jazz records or whatever, but trying to get around that and just create my own. And I've been having it's been more fun. So I've been rocking that. And then I make the instrumental. Then I usually write to that. That's what I've been doing lately. I write to the instrumental now instead of the other way around. It's much harder to piece the music together to an already existing a cappella is what I find. But
so you're doing most of this stuff on synth is what you're saying.
Yep. Synth. And then I'll add some loops.
And now, are you using the synth just as a port for MIDI to register MIDI, or are you using just straight out of the synth itself?
Okay, so straight out of the synth itself into my Tascam digital 4-track. That's where I make the fake jazz song, and then I strip that apart, throw it on my computer, and start sampling it in a DA, in a DAW, basically. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wait, you put it into, like, you have a digital thing that you're putting it in first and then putting it in the computer?
Yeah, like digital 4-track. So it's a modern version of a cassette 4-track. It's just digital.
I wanted to get one of those. What's it like? Tell me about that. We looked at a Zoom that was like that with 24 tracks, and we never made the jump. So tell me about using that.
I love it because I come from the age, I grew up on cassette 4-tracks. That's how I started making music. So that's why it works for me so well. And I like that as a starting point and as a scratch pad. And I don't know if you have, I'm sure you have experience with the cassette version, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really the same thing. It's the exact same thing. One, you know, it works the exact same way, same workflow. It just happens to be digital. So I'll record the piano on track one, bass on track two, maybe some vibraphone on track three, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then just play over myself each time. And then I take that, put it into the computer, sample myself, add either a drum machine I program myself or some loop layers, depending on what's happening with the song. Then I'll take that and bring the song now all mixed down, bring it back and put it on the fourth track of the digital 4-track. And then I'll do my vocals on track 1, 2, and 3.
Wait, actually still bounce it just like you used to with, I love it. Okay.
Yeah. But I bounce it on the computer and then I produce and bounce it and then bring it back over. It makes it so much easier.
Okay. All right.
I can add more. And so I can go beyond 4 tracks, then squish it back down and pop it back over and then focus on the vocals.
So you can undo the bounce is what you're saying if you're using the Tascam recorder?
Well, no, I'm saying that I am finishing the song on my DAW and then bouncing it down on the DAW to a stereo track and then bringing that back over to the 4-track.
Oh, okay. So you've already exported it to the DAW. Then you're setting it out as a 2-track back to the Tascam, not bouncing it on the Tascam to the 4-track. Gotcha. Right. Okay. Cause I was like, you're going to lose everything then. All right. All right.
Yeah. I may have misspoke. I should say that. Yeah.
No, I probably just misunderstood.
I dump it over, play around in the DAW, and then I bring it back over. And then I focus just on the vocals at that point. And then I either use those vocals or I use those as a work tape where I do to memorize it or whatever. And then I bring it back over and do the final vocals on my fancy mic, which is really just an SM58. Mm-hmm. I settled on the SM58. I did the thing everyone does. I bought the super expensive mic. And I just don't like it. It just doesn't sound right to me. Maybe it's just with what I like with my voice or whatever, but the SM58 is what I settled on. And I actually found that in a dumpster. I got it in a dumpster. The company I worked for was moving and they were throwing everything in dumpsters. And there was a brand new SM58 just lying on the top of all the junk. So I just took it home. And I also brought home a 70s boombox that I keep in my kitchen, which I love. It still works. I've still played cassettes on it. And I love that too. But yeah, so that's my process as of late. But yeah, all the rest of the years, I always wrote the lyrics first, which as after talking to people, it seems to be a backwards way to do it for most people's workflow.
Yeah,
but I always work for you too, I guess. You know.
The one thing I've learned from another musician I spoke to that the only reason I did it is because when they said it, it made sense. I, of course, start out with the music. That's the easiest part. I'm not a guy who can just go, I wrote lyrics, it has structure, and now I'll put a song around it. That's just not how I work. Never have been. I need to know what's motivating, what it sounds like, what words would work over this. I don't know. Usually what it is I'll be dinking around and I'm like, ooh, that sounds neat. And then I'll just run from there. And then I'm like, damn, this needs lyrics now. So that's my process. But one person told me when I asked them about their process, they said they always start out with the chorus. And I was like, oh, that's smart, because I'll spend a lot of time making a great verse. And then it's like, oh, crap, the chorus is here. And now I got to think of something catchy. And it's like, I just wasted all my best ideas on the verse. So lately I've been starting or trying to start with the chorus. That's like the one thing that I've changed over the years. Otherwise, yeah, it's mess around, come up with a neat sounding thing, and then keep building it out until it needs lyrics. But here's something I really want to ask you. And it's something that I've actually been trying out lately, or trying to figure out lately. Now, you said you're trying to get away from sampling and using sampling. You're trying to do your own stuff in the songs and build it from scratch. But the sound of hip hop drums, the sound of sampled drums, love it. I always want to recreate it. I don't know how to dig for it. I don't know how to get it. I don't know. We have live drums, and whenever I go to record drums, I just can't make them sound like sampled drums. And the sampled drums are a lot of the time live freaking drums. So what's your process when it comes to making the drums? Like, what are you running it through? How do you get a cool sound for them? Like, what do you prefer?
That's a really good question. And I think to get good sounds out of drums, lots of compression, maybe almost too much compression, or maybe heavy parallel compression on a separate track and go crazy with it. And then bleed that in over the other drum, and you're gonna get that dirty crunch.
Okay.
And then you can control it by the level, you know.
Because then you're not ruining the original audio.
You still have the hi-fi of the original, but you have the crunch coming in behind it, sort of ghosting it. And then just depending on the sound, how far you want to bring it in, what you're going for, or that particular drum sound, they're all different depending. That's one way. Another way is tape distortion effect. Tape distortion, a little bit of, just straight up distortion. A little bit of distortion goes a long way. And also the same thing, maybe bring it in on a separate track, so you can control it and leave the original intact.
Yeah.
You're bringing up maybe one track of compression, one track of distortion. And then I would probably put the slight tape distortion directly on the drum, but maybe you could do that on a separate track. I don't know. I would usually put that on the exact track. That would be my formula to get them sounding crunchy and hip hop sounding. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a good one. You could also add a slight warp effect that may be undetectable to the naked ear, but it's there and it's subconsciously haunting the beat, which gives it that would sound as well. A very slight warp that you wouldn't hear because because they're drums and it's not like a chord that you wouldn't hear.
Right. It doesn't ring out as much. Okay.
It doesn't ring out, but it's a good subconscious thing, I think, to sprinkle in there.
That's everything you just said is so, like, the second you said it, it's like, God, that's so freaking obvious. It was right there. You know, I was so close. The separate tape thing, I recently started doing sends on guitar because whenever I tried to add effect or manipulate the guitar for something, it would ruin the original sound. And that's when I was like, duh, send the and blend it. And why wouldn't I have done the same thing with the drums? Duh. Okay. Brilliant. All right. I love it. Cool. What DAW are you using?
I still use Acid.
Really?
Sony Acid. I haven't upgraded to Music Match yet or whatever the new name, right. The new company is. I'm still using, yeah. My philosophy is stick with what you know, with what works.
Yeah, but how are you even running it? When's the last update been on that? If you're using the original Sony Acid.
Yeah, I have a pro version and a studio version. So I use a studio for when I'm doing 16-bit projects, and I use the pro for the 24-bit projects, depending on if I'm working with someone. I like to be set up for both because some people prefer to work in one or the other. So I just have the two systems set up. But yeah, there are no more updates. I'm just running the old version on Windows 7. I'm overdue for an update, but the problem is, and the reason why I like to work with what I know is, of course, it takes so much time out away when you're going through learning curve. So if I can just keep moving on with what I have, I prefer to do that. At some point, I'm going to have to pay my dues and upgrade and go through learning curve, but
yeah.
I've just been avoiding it.
Well, the other thing too is
it works. So,
well, we started out around the same time with, we used Vegas, which I didn't even realize until years later. It's actually video editing software.
Yes.
But we were using it for multi-tracking because it lets you create as many multi-tracks as you want. But then we realized the more you put, it had limitations.
yeah.
But my guitar player still has it and likes to use it when he's doing stuff at his house or recording his piano and thing like that. And he's upgraded. He's since done it since Sonic Foundry became Sony. And then, which Sonic Foundry, that whole thing was created here in Madison, by the way, where I am.
Oh, cool.
Sonic, the original Sonic Foundry was here, and then it sold out to Sony. But he upgraded, and here's the thing about you upgrading Acid. It's really one of those, like, you can upgrade, but if you want to do this, you have to pay for this license. And if you want to do that, like, you're going to get there, and suddenly things you're normally using... it's going to be behind a paywall. So I'm just telling you, it's moved to like the Adobe model where it's like, you can do this, but here's your monthly subscription to have access to it. So just a little forewarning, because he goes through that all the time. Yeah.
Thank you for the warning. And that's another downside of why I just stick with what works. I love SoundForge as well for cleaning stuff up.
Yes.
Especially with the vocals, going in and cleaning things up and cleaning out noise and stuff like that. And then I pair that with Isotope, and it takes it a little further with cleaning up some background noise.
And that's the mastering tool, right? The Isotope, or is that Ozone?
Ozone's mastering.
Okay.
Isotope makes Ozone, but they make Alloy is what I use for mixing stuff. And I have Nectar for vocals, which is what I use the most.
Oh.
I'll pair Nectar with SoundForge, and I really like that. And there, you know what? I also pair RX. I have a super minimal version of Isotope RX, and that's how I clean up the vocals with. I reduce noise, background noise.
Yeah.
So I love Isotope. I think they're incredible.
Okay.
But there's going to be a point when I need to upgrade to Windows 11. My computer's going to die or something.
Oh, you're not even on Windows 11.
and then at that point, I am going to upgrade everything all at once. But
I think Windows 11 is almost at end of life.
Or whatever Windows is out whenever this computer dies. We'll see how long we can ride on it. We'll see how it goes. I might be using the 4-track there for a while in between just to keep things going. We'll see. But I have a Tascam 4-track, I have a Tascam 8-track, and I have a Zoom 16-track. No, 16 or 18 or 20. Maybe it's 24.
Oh, you do have the Zoom.
I do have the Zoom. I haven't used it very much. The reason why I purchased that was so that I could use it for 24-bit projects, because Tascam it stops at 16. And some people just prefer to use that like when I'm collabing with people or whatever. So I just had that. I wanted to have that as an option. But I barely use all the functions in it. Like, you can use it as a drum machine, apparently, and all these other things. I'm just interested on tracking my vocals, so I use the most basic setup. But
what do you use for a drum machine?
I have a Boss from, it's the orange and black one. I can't remember the model number. 303. The Boss 303. So it takes all the Roland drum machines and packs them into one groove box.
Yeah.
So the 808, 909, 606, all of our favorites. And a few that you like never ever heard of before, some weird ones they just threw in there. I love that drum machine. It just keeps going. I bought it in the 90s. I still have it. I have a TR-606 for the electro. If I go in electro clash type of angle for anything, I prefer that. I have a MS-2000 Korg synthesizer.
Okay.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
You might even have that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I have my famous Casio that I purchased for $50 at Toys R Us. But that I get a lot out of that. The upright bass sound on that thing is incredible. And if with a little tweaking, it's a really good sample on there. Like it's amazing. I would not expect that.
I use a Yamaha home synthesizer to the point where I did a show in Milwaukee a few months back. And the sound guy was just looking at it and smiling. And I'm like, I know it's old. And he's like, no, my grandmother had this. It reminds me of her.
Oh, no. That's
and so, he was having a moment because the thing was so old because he remembered it from when he was a child and his grandmother had it at her house. And I'm like, and I'm on stage with it. Yeah. The worst part about it is every once in a while, because you have to dial the numbers in for what the sound you want to use. And if you accidentally hit the wrong number and go to a different number, like if you go beyond 100, and sometimes I accidentally do that, it starts playing the pre-programmed settings and it'll start doing, and you can't stop it. I actually have to turn it off and turn it on again to get it to stop.
At that point, they might as well just play over top of it and just go for it.
let's just roll with it, boys. So here's a question I have for you. You do more than I, and I've been looking into it recently, but you do collaborations with people, whether it be people collaborating on your stuff or you collaborating on other people's stuff. How do you go about working that? How do you go about, like who decides who's going to do what, or how do you even go about sharing the process? Because most of the people you work with, they're not working on it with you in the same room. You guys are collaborating remotely. So first, how do you decide who does what, or how do people approach you, or you approach other people going, I want this done? Like, what's that like?
I had a track recently where I liked everything about the track except my bass stem was coming up short. So I was in need of a bass player. So I went on Fiverr and researched some bass players, reached out to them, and then they created an incredible bass that and really makes it just brought the song alive. It was worth every penny, and it wasn't even that expensive. Totally want to do that again. But with that, it was simply being very clear in writing what I was looking for, and but a lot of people on Fiverr, they sort of interview you before they accept the job. They'll ask you a bunch of questions. They'll always tell you to contact them before you actually purchase it. So you kind of go back and forth, just have to be very, very clear. So you're both on the same page. And then if it feels like a good fit, they'll send you the job, and then you can process it that way. I think that's the best way. So instead of going on there, so I'm going to use this guy and just click the job, it's best to talk back and forth first, make sure you're on the same page, because not everyone's going to click or whatever. But we clicked, we went great. And I just sent him, I sent him the instrumental without the bass part, and then he just played over top of it in his DAW and sent back just the bass part. And then I had it professionally mixed, so I sent that along with the rest of my stems to the mix engineer. I stopped mixing my own stuff this year because I'm not a mix engineer. I was just feeling my way through it or whatever, but I'm just liking the results I'm getting from paying someone to do it. I feel like it brings up everything to another level. So I'm just focused on writing lyrics, doing the vocals, and producing the music. And then I send it off. I do a rough demo mix to send the engineer so they can hear what I'm going for. But other than that, and that's pretty much what my mixes are anyway, right? So I just do that, send it off, and it comes back nice and shiny, sounding beautiful. So
that's cool.
And I have a combo team. One guy mixes and the other guy masters, and they work together. So I think that works well too, because they talk back and forth to each other, and I just think that helps the overall process. It's not necessary, but it's convenient too.
Yeah.
And where was I? What was I starting with?
You went on Fiverr.
Yeah. So the Fiverr is one way I do it if I want an individual musician. But then like Block Sonic, everyone's great about collabing. So Cheese and Pot C will reach out and say, we think you'd sound good on this track. And they'll send me the instrumental with usually with their verses. And then there'll be a blank spot where I'm supposed to go and I'll write it, record it, just send them the acapella back. You just have to make sure you're starting at the zero point from their instrumental, of course, so they'd sync it up correctly. I've had a lot of issues in the past, not with the Block Sonic people because they're all pros, but with other random people from SoundCloud where they don't know how to sync up the hip hop vocals. They assume that you always start on the downbeat, but that sometimes you come in before the first beat, sometimes you come in a little after, and Cheese from Cheese and Pot C taught me what he does is he leaves part of the instrumental in the beginning and then chops it off right before the acapella starts so the producer can sync up the beat and the leader, it's like a leader beat, and then they can just erase that. And then you're automatically synced up. So I've been doing that ever since he taught me. That's how he does it. Because I was running into that problem a lot with people and then getting back tracks that are like all out of sync. So.
Okay.
So you've
reached out to people on Fiverr, and then like when you've collaborated with Cheese and Potsy on Block Sonic, like do you guys just go, hey, I'm working on something, let's do something together? Or which I know that's the beauty of Block Sonic is it's really a tight-knit community of people.
Yes.
And it continues to grow to be that with the musicians that are on there. But like, how do you guys talk back and forth or go through this?
I love that question. So there's a few different ways. Sometimes the track's all built, ready to go. Everything's done except for my part. And he'll send it and say, you want to jump on this? And I always say yes, because I love their music. There was a time I reached out to Potsy. I asked him for a beat, if he had instrumentals. He sent me an instrumental. I was working on it for like a ridiculous amount of time. Like it was more than a year, but I actually lost track of how many months it was. And I kept telling him, I'm working on it. Like he didn't care either. He wasn't ever even checking up on me, but I just want to let you know I'm still working on that track. And then I just couldn't find the mood that was right for the track. So him and I jumped on a call and we were just shooting this shit, right? And I was telling him how that instrumental reminded me, it sounded like a futuristic spacescape or something. And then it clicked. He's like, oh, you mean like Zeopolis? Like that's the name of his personal label, his personal website, and all this stuff. And then that's how the track Zeopolis came. He told me about when he told me the story that when he was a kid, he had this fake planet called Zeopolis, or I think it was a city on a planet called Zeopolis. And he went on and on and on about how he had this whole thing worked out in his head ever since he was a little kid. And I'm like, well, that's the track right there. So then we knew what to do. But after like a year of trying to figure out what to do with the instrumental, it just out of a conversation, it just popped. And then we knew what to do.
Nice.
And went from there. But mostly they complete the track, or I'll complete the track and say, I can hear your voice on this. This is a subject that I think you would sound good on. They always send me, if they ever rap about pizza, they always send those to me.
Yeah.
So they know I'm a fellow pizza lover. So that's real. I just spoke with them last week and they're like, we have another pizza track coming up. So we're going to be sending you.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a theme throughout their entire catalog. Every year or every couple of years, they come up with a pizza themed track. So.
Okay. And one more collaboration I want to ask you about with, or if this is a collaboration, but the Give Thanks video, it's an animated video that you released over on your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. How did you meet the artist that did that? And how did that come about?
That was a Fiverr.
Okay.
And I dug through, I narrowed it down to five animators that I really liked. And I started reaching out to them and talking back and forth. And I clicked with this guy.
Okay.
And yeah, we seemed to be on the same page. He was into it. I was into what he was doing. And I'm very happy with how it turned out. I like it. I like it when you turn off all the lights and watch it.
Yeah.
There's like extra things in the background. Like there are people walking around in shadows or like silhouettes of people, which you don't necessarily see in a lit room, which I think is really cool. So there's this subconscious vibe going on with it too.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a Fiverr collab.
Okay.
I sent him the song.
I never thought of doing that, but that's really cool that you've done that multiple times and for multiple different reasons. I always go on Fiverr and think I'm going to find something, and then I get there and I'm like, what am I looking for? You know, yeah. I go there just to check it out for curiosity, but you've actually got a purpose for being there.
Yeah. I never go in there without a purpose. That's okay. True. Yeah.
Now I want to talk about the one most brilliant thing that a net label has done, and maybe other ones have. It's just that I know the Block Sonic net label, but when you started out, you said you're the host of the Block Sonic podcast.
Yes.
And I think it's brilliant. The whole thing where it's like, you guys are, they're releasing music on the net label all the time. And it's like, well, let's do a music show of the music that's on this label. And it's brilliant. Now you started hosting it. Originally Potsy was hosting it. I was actually on the show, I want to say a year ago, maybe 2 years ago.
Yes.
And when did you start hosting the show? Why did that happen?
That was a little over a year ago. And Potsy went on sabbatical. He wanted to take a break. He had some stuff going on. He didn't have time to do it. So I took over temporarily for him. And then it was a 6-month slot. And when it was time for him to come back, he asked if I just wanted to continue to do it.
Okay.
So he's thinking about coming back in a different capacity. He has some ideas, but we'll see if that pans out. So we may see more of Potsy on the podcast front. We'll see what happens. But yeah, he handed it over to me and I gladly took it. I really enjoyed doing it. I had a college radio show back in the late 80s and it reminds me of that. So it gives me that feeling. And I just love radio and on both sides as a listener and as the master of ceremonies. So yeah, so I took it over gladly. And shout out to Potsy for handing that over. And that shout out to Long John for, I think he told Potsy that I might be a good fit for that if Potsy wasn't already thinking about that. Long John, Potsy, Cheese, and I, we get a lot of video calls and hang out and whatever, so it just seemed like a natural fit, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm actually not quite sure why they decided me, but I'm glad to take up the helm for now.
I was gonna say, own it, man. What do you mean you're not sure why they decided to use you?
I don't know. I don't think they ever saw me in a DJ capacity, so that's why maybe I was, you know, I wasn't sure. They've only ever heard me like rapping or making music or whatever, but so I I don't think they ever heard a sample of me doing that exact thing, so that's what I mean by that.
All right. And then one more thing, what things you have coming up, what releases, what projects do you have coming up that you'd like to tell people about?
This year I have a few more releases. Definitely. I always release a track for Net Label Day. I mark that on my calendar each year, July 14th. And I always definitely make sure I pull out a track out of my catalog, my unreleased catalog, to polish up and put out. So I'm definitely coming out with an instrumental track this year. Usually my tracks always have vocals. So I'm planning on bringing out an instrumental track, which is different for me.
Okay.
But that'll be a fun little experiment to try. And I have a bunch of releases lined up for the rest of the year. I've been releasing singles over on Spotify separately. And what I think of what I want to do is after I get some real world feedback from putting them out in the world over there, then I think I want to compile them and do an XL on Block Sonic, something like that. So I don't know if you know, but I've been doing pretty much all singles over at Block Sonic. I'm the king of the Uni drops. So it would be nice to do either one of the Six on the Seven is like their EP version of an EP that the idea of the Six on the Seven is what would actually fit on a 7-inch 45 RPM record and then replicate that digitally by the time constraints. So I might be interested in doing that or just a classic EP or an album. We'll see how it pans out. But the plan is to I'm just testing some stuff now as singles.
Okay.
Even outside of Block Sonic that I'm going to bring back to Block Sonic as a package. That's the plan. So
nice
for this year. Yeah.
All right.
So we'll see how that goes.
And if people wanted to check out your stuff, where should they go do that? Just Bloxonic itself or anywhere else?
Yeah, definitely Bloxonic. Bloxonic's the place to go to check me out for sure.
All right.
Yep. And definitely check out the Block Report, the podcast.
Yeah,
check
for sure.
It out. Yep. All we always have all the new releases from the previous month are on there. So it's a great way to stay on top of what's going on. Even if you don't have time to listen to all the new releases, you can get a sample of them on the Block Report. So check that out.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
All right. Thank you for having me. Pew, pew.